morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Everyone awake and ready?
Awake and ready.
Great. Will you please pray with me? Oh, Heavenly Father.
Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Blessed Master.
Dearest Mother.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Reading this morning from the Gospel of Swami Ramdas by Swami Satchidananda on fear. Mother Hamilton, I was thrilled to read your experience during your travels in the Himalayas, where you were entering big caves and shouting, Hari Om, to see if there were any wild animals in them. Papa, Ramdas had no fear at all. He wanted to see some wild animals face to face, but only could see them at a distance. Ramdas saw Ram in them and loved them. Where there is love, there is no fear. Ralph Hamilton. Fear is mostly imaginary and unnecessary. It causes a tremendous amount of trouble, agony, and worry all through the world. Papa. When you feel there is something other than yourself, there is fear. When there is nothing other than yourself, whom are you to be afraid of? Mother, there are only a few who have attained that high stage. Papa, only for such people there is no fear. For all others, there is fear. Even in the case of those who have realized that there is nothing other than themselves, a sort of fear seems to persist. That is only a nervous reaction. Somehow they are perturbed when they see something fearful or dangerous. A little later they are surprised and wonder why and whom are they afraid of, when everywhere there is none other than themselves or God. Still, why should this body react like that? This fear is only a reaction of the nerves, not of the heart or mind. Some people who have conquered that also are absolutely fearless. Ralph. Some are afraid because they imagine so many things. Papa, when fear is in the mind, the person is weak. Ram Dass in his old life, that is, before God took him up, was afraid of snakes. But later, when the serpent wound his leg, he was in divine ecstasy. He was not at all afraid. On the other hand, he was happy when the snake was there. Ram Dass extolled it to the skies for its love for him. Many people have asked Ram Dass why God created wild beasts, snakes, and other insects. Ram Dass' answer to them was, if the wild animals and insects could speak, they would ask what business God had in creating man who kills them. Limits to Ahimsa. Mother, what about mosquitoes? Papa, we cannot practice Ahimsa in its extreme. Mahatma Gandhi was a votary of Ahimsa. Once in his ashram in Sabarmati, a serpent came inside and was killed by a sannyasi who belonged to the Arya Samaj, but was with Gandhiji then. When Gandhiji came to know of the incident, he asked the sannyasi why he had killed the serpent when the rule in the ashram was to practice Ahimsa. The sannyasi replied that the serpent was venomous and if let free would bite the ashramites. But Gandhiji held to his own opinion that killing the serpent was a mistake and that the sannyasi ought to have refrained and that such persons had no place in his ashram. Soon after, the sannyasi left the ashram. Some years later, Mahatma Gandhi started his campaign and the British government arrested him and put him in jail. There, he developed appendicitis and had to undergo an operation. One day after the operation, this sannyasi went to see him at the hospital and asked Gandhiji, "What is it that you have done? By getting operated, you have allowed many bacilli to be killed and destroyed. Why did you permit it?" He thus got an occasion to corner Mahatmaji. Do you know what the reply Gandhiji gave? That he was afraid of death. "You will find it is easy to preach, but most difficult to practice. Nonviolence is nonviolence in all conditions. We should not deliberately harm anybody. Some people rejoice at the suffering of others. That should not be our nature. Suppose there are people or animals who are in distress. Let us help them. Let us love them. But if you see serpents going inside houses and biting people, then you should send the serpents away, not outside merely, but to the other world. Otherwise, the serpent will send you all to the other world, if there is another world. Mother, is there another world? Papa, the whole thing is within you. You are the all-pervading and eternal reality. In that, all the worlds are contained. In that sense, there is no world outside us. Therefore, Ram Dass says, there is heaven, there is hell, and there is purgatory. But all these are within ourselves. Mother, is that also not without? Are we the microcosm and the universe is the macrocosm? Papa, microcosm and macrocosm are one. Jiva and Shiva are one. Individual soul and cosmic soul are one. They are not different. But we make a difference between them. That is ignorance. So everything is within us. The cowherds complained to Yashoda that her foster child, Sri Krishna, had eaten mud. Taking Krishna by the hand and chiding him, the mother asked, "Why did you eat mud?" Thereupon Krishna protested and denied the charge and opened his mouth for her to see. The mother saw the whole universe in it and was aghast. God fills the universe and is also beyond it. Such a God is within us. Then, is not the universe within us? Mother, I know the microcosm and macrocosm are one, but they are separate also. Do not all the parts make the whole? Papa, so long as you think you are the individual soul, you see the whole world outside you. But when God is within you, then you see all the worlds are within you. Mother, I know that, still I see them outside. Papa, you can see them within and without. You have projected yourself as the universe. So you are everything, and everything is in you. We are such the wonderful beneficiaries of Swami Satchidananda, who wrote down these sayings. After working from 3 a.m. in the morning until past 10 o'clock at night, serving Papa all the time, he would take time before he would go to bed and write down the things that were said that day. If you've ever tried to write down a conversation and remember word for word, you know what a task that is. But Swamiji had a marvelous memory and was able to do it. And great gratitude to him for that. From Mother's Talk in the Cross and Lotus Journal, June 2010. Everybody wants to hang on to this human life. We had a question about fear the other evening, but the greatest thing and the only thing to fear is fear itself. Why do you think that fear comes into your consciousness? It is the fear of this human ego. That which is in truth does not exist. It thinks of itself as separate from God, and its fear is that it will lose its independence its power to move and act on its own, to take credit for everything that it does, to give itself all the glory that we should be given to God alone. It is truly the Antichrist within every man. And believe me, it sets up a battle because it is constantly deluding you, telling you to hang on to the things of the senses, and putting fear in your mind that if you were to let go of the things of the senses and reach out for God alone, that somehow you will be destroyed. You're going to have a terrible experiences. You may even die, and yet you have to die in order to live. This human ego, the Son of Man, has to die in order that we may be aware of the eternal light of God within ourselves. Now this involves discipleship, because it says, if you will not pick up your cross and follow the Christ, you cannot be his disciple. And that means exactly what it says. And so, the first step is picking up your cross and following the Christ, is to discover within yourself a deep yearning for God. A yearning that is so great that it supersedes your yearning for everything, for everyone else in the world. If you would yearn after him as you yearn after the things of the senses, you would yearn after him as you yearn to have a lover, a child, a husband, a wife, whatever, and put it into everything you have, you would find that you would go forth on the path very rapidly. But we kid ourselves. We play games with ourselves. We tell ourselves that everything else is more important and that God always comes second. We have an awful time getting up a little bit early in the morning and meditating upon God, of keeping awake at night in order that we should establish our oneness with him. And yet, he gives us 24 hours of the day. He gives us our very life, the right to move and live and breathe and have our being. It is our thoughts that constantly fills our minds. It is his energy that makes it possible to do the creative work that we do. It is his will that projects everything in this world. We are the co-creators with him. He has given us this blessed privilege, and still, we try to save this life. We try to save the life that isn't worth anything and give up that which is eternal within ourselves. Do you not realize what you are missing? That when you make the supreme sacrifice, even if you have the greatest fear in your heart, that if you just plunge into the ocean of God's life, his love, his bliss, that you still will have life? But if you try to save your life, you will lose it. You will go like any other ordinary human being. I'd like to speak this morning on fear and living an extraordinary life. It is thematic within all the great religions and within all great spiritual and mystical paths that there is a death that we must go through in order to truly live. The great symbology of Christianity, of Jesus being crucified upon the cross, seems like a very strange emblem for a religion to have. And yet, it tells the way that we must pursue if we are to enter into that kingdom of heaven. And why is it that we must die? And what is it that does die? We must die because we are living in a field of separation from God. We feel as if we are an individual that is separated from all other people and all other creation. This is the notion that must die. It is the ego self. And we are so attached to this ego self that we have come to believe that that is truly who we are. That if we give up this little ego self, we give up ourselves. And yet, the great mystics, the great masters down through all time have told us that we are something tremendous, that we may realize who we really are. And if we would but take hold of ourselves and pursue, follow the Christ, follow Krishna, follow Buddha, Follow the great masters as they have gone, because they are the way, the truth, and the life. And we must follow them if we are to enter into that sublime consciousness. And when we do that, then we transcend all that we were before, and we enter into something new. But from the ego standpoint, it feels as if it will die, that we have to let go of everything that we cherish, everything that we think of as ours and mine and possessions that I have. All of it must go into the sea. Yesterday, we had a wonderful meditation. In our 6 hours of silence and meditation. And during this time, I had an interesting internal experience. I had internal vision of meeting a master in the Himalayas, a wonderful spiritual master. And when I pranamed at his feet, I felt myself surrendering all that I was at the feet of this great master. And as I did so, the notion came into my mind that he may ask me to stay in the Himalayas. And that how would I live? What would I eat? What would I clothe myself with? These briefly flashed through my mind. How would all of that work if I were to stay? And with those fleeting, passing thoughts, I quickly surrendered them all at the feet of God. And how long would I stay? Would it be hours, days, years, lifetimes? And it all felt like an open book. And so as these different fleeting thoughts came through, they all got surrendered at the feet of God, knowing that whatever God wills for me is for the highest good of everybody, including this form. And so it felt like a tremendous point of departure, a tremendous sense of letting go. When we live in this body, it is amazing how many things we become attached to. At one time, before I owned a home and different vehicles and all sorts of things I had that I might call my possessions. And one by one, God took all of these things away from me. They were given away, they were sold, they were put into storage, but they all went away in one way or another until I had very little left to my name. And it felt exactly right to do. It felt perfect to do. And I didn't want anything, and I felt like everything that I'd had before was a responsibility that I had. I had to maintain it, I had to keep it, I had to keep it in good condition and all the rest of it. And by letting go of all these things, I was really gaining a great deal of freedom. Since that time, it seems like God has had it in mind to load me up again. And so I have a house, and I have vehicles, and I even have a trailer, and all kinds of things that I would have never imagined at that time. And true enough, they each one feels like a responsibility, and they are. And we are responsible to God when we take on things, when we have possessions. We have a responsibility to look after God's things, because really, everything comes from God, and they are His things, and so we should maintain them properly. So there's a great responsibility that goes with these things, but as householder yogis, these are the kinds of things that we take on. We do it for a reason. We do it, perhaps, out of our own sense of comfort and security, but we also do it because we play a role in this world, and God has us in this world to play a role. When Swami Trelyananga was asked about Lari Mahasya, because Lari Mahasya came and pranamed down to Swami Trelyananga, who is a great, great renunciant, to the point where he didn't even wear any clothes. And amazingly enough, to those who are around the Swami, he pranamed fully back to Lari Maharshi, and they were astounded at this because he was a householder. And normally, Swamis don't do that with householders. And they asked him about it, and he said, Lari Maharshi is like a divine kitten. Wherever God has placed him, he sits there contentedly, and he's all right, no matter what he does. But he was acknowledging the tremendous state of realization that Lari Maharshi had, and yet he owned a home, and he had all the accoutrements that went with being a householder. He had a wife, he had children. He had it all, you might say. And he maintained a job for many, many years, and when he retired from that job, he would tutor the Maharaja's children in languages and in mathematics and in reading. He would row across the river there and go to the palace and stay at the palace sometime, and sometimes when the rivers ran high, he would have to stay there for the palace for days or sometimes weeks because he wasn't able to get back because of the flooding kind of conditions. But he did that in order to make ends meet. And so he lived this very humble life, totally surrendered to Babaji's will that he should live in this world and remain as a householder. So we surrender to our circumstances. We surrender to what God has given us to do. Each one of us have a unique destiny. We have a contribution to make in this world. Now, sometimes you may not think much of what your contribution is. You may just see yourself as living your life, going about doing your business. But really, this is just living on the surface of life if we don't take it a little deeper. You should see your life as something wonderful. It is unique. Only you can live your life. Only you can fulfill the destiny that God has made you to come to fulfill. Now, there is no such thing as higher or lower from a spiritual standpoint. If you looked at the relative merits of the worldly life of Jesus, who was an itinerant preacher, owning very little or nothing, and Pontius Pilate, who had a great deal of power and wealth, from a worldly standpoint, you would say Pontius Pilate had it made. And Jesus was, maybe we would call him poor today. Maybe we'd want to give him welfare because he wasn't making enough money. But he wandered from town to town and they would beg for their food. And so this is the kind of life that he lived. And yet we remember Jesus as the tremendous spiritual master that he was, the great avatar, the descent of spirit down into flesh. There is no high, nor is there low in a spiritual sense. There is only, are you fulfilling what you have come to do? And if you do, you can be a blazing spiritual success, even if you play what might be considered a small role in this world. And do you fulfill it with grace, with dignity, with mindfulness? Do you bring the total and complete light of God with you into everything that you do? Or do you live a little mindlessly? Do you just kind of go about robotically, doing the things you do because they're the things that you have done, and you don't think that deeply about it? You see, we have a tremendous potential here. And when you live your life to the full, when you bring the entirety of everything that God is within you to whatever it is that you do, whether you see it as high or low from a human standpoint, it is all equal. It is all the same. And when you do it perfectly, when you do it beautifully, when you do it with fullness of consciousness, you are bringing light into this world. You are fulfilling the Dharma that you have come to do. Your soul's destiny. And it is a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful opportunity. You can have tremendous realization while you are sweeping or while you are weeding or while you are cleaning or while you are running great companies or having great creative thoughts. There is no high nor low. There is only attunement. Now, what interferes most with inner attunement is two sides of the same coin. And on one side of that coin is fear. On the other side of that coin is desire. And really, they are rooted in the same notion, separation from God. That's the coin that these are the two faces of. And when you are able to overcome fear, and you are able to overcome ego desire, then you can live in complete attunement and harmony with divine consciousness. Now, this is the most wonderful life that you can imagine, because being attuned to God gives you a sense of peace, first of all. You think about how many people really experience peace. There are so many ironies in this world, but one of the greatest ones, I think, is that in a relative sense, down through history, if we observe over the last several thousand years, we live, by and large, in an extremely safe society with plenty to eat, abundance of all sorts. And you would think that down through history, if anybody had a right to feel at peace with ourselves, it would be us. And yet, what do we read about? What do we know? People live in a state of anxiety. Everybody is complaining about being anxious, being nervous, being fearful. They are afraid of everything that can come to them. And what this proves to us is that having everything in a material sense is not really what brings about peace. So goes the saying, uneasy rests is the head that the crown rests upon. Because a king or any ruler or anybody who's taken on great responsibility in that way also takes on great responsibilities. And with those responsibilities, so oftentimes comes anxiety and fear. It is only when we root our consciousness in divine consciousness that we can really give up this chronic sense of anxiety. Think about yourself when you were driving somewhere or going to some appointment or going about and doing your duties. Are you at peace with yourself? Do you feel that peace that surpasses all understanding? And if not, why not? If we examine our thoughts, we will see that our thoughts are always entertaining what can go wrong. Who might find us at fault? Shame and fear go hand in hand. And we feel vulnerable to this world because we have not established our oneness with God. So we must set aside these fears, but they're not exactly easy to do, are they? As Papa described, and I think it's very interesting, that he described even in his state of complete and total oneness with God, that the body would still entertain fear. I listened to an interesting description from a physiological standpoint why that can be true. And the explanation was this, that whatever your ideas about death, whether you fear death or not, your body's primary function is to survive. It is survival. And it's organized around that survival. So, for instance, if you're going in for an operation, you may be totally at peace about it. But your body is reacting with fear. It sees this as potential death coming to you. And that the nerve receptors, it happens on the cellular level, even more refined than the nerves. There are receptors, hundreds of thousands of receptors within the cells, and that the fear receptors actually increase. You can see how that could serve you in order to survive, that suddenly you're more attuned to your environment, you're more wary. You have all your senses being radar for what dangers might come, and your body does this automatically. And so you may have a body response Ramana Maharshi was once asked, when he was sleeping at night, he had a lot of physical difficulties and things he had to contend with within the body. And sometimes at nighttime, his body would moan. And so somebody asked him, Master, you are a great realized being. You realize that you're not the body and you are more than that, and yet you moan and groan at nighttime. And Ramana Maharshi just simply replied, the body does what the body does. It's all right. The body has its own response. But it doesn't mean that we have to go along with it. It can have initial fear. It can have a startle response to a loud noise or some danger that seems to come to us. But as Papa said, for the realized being, there is no resonance within the mind or the heart for that fear. There's no place for it to begin to take on a life of its own. Most of our fear is something that is manufactured by the mind. Most pain that we experience is manufactured from the mind. It is a fear of further pain in the future. And so when we are able to let go of any need to be in fear, we can be free of it. And when we are free of fear, we have that peace. And particularly when we have attunement to spirit, when we have attunement to God, we have that peace then. And it no longer are we filled with the fear, no longer do we have the idea of separation. It's a wonderful thing living this life, because as I look out through these two eyes, and through these senses, I see all of you. As Mother talked about, she looks out and she sees the world outside. But the world is subtly transformed, because instead of looking out and seeing all separate individuals out there, and some of them may be friendly and others may not be, I see and perceive each individual as an extension of myself. Now, this is not an egotistical kind of way of looking at it and thinking I'm the only one from an ego standpoint. It is the universal consciousness. It is omniscience. And in omniscience, you feel yourself to be every particle of creation. When you see blades of grass, they are not separate from you. When you see trees and leaves, when you see people, when you see buildings and structures, none of them are separate from you. And you feel through that deep connection and that deep communion a total and complete sense of oneness. Now, as Papa says, when you feel you are one with everything, what is there to be afraid of? Really, what is there to be afraid of? It is all God, and therefore it is all good. It will take us on a journey. It will take us on an adventure. It will take us through worlds and universes, both physical and astral, as well as causal. It will take us directly into the very heart of God. And on that wonderful adventure, we may enjoy many challenges. We may enjoy many revelations as God shows us new layers of God consciousness, new revelations, new truths, as they constantly come to us. Gaining your God realization does not mean you know everything there is to know. It does mean that you have a source and connection with the source of knowledge, the source of knowledge, the source of creation, the source of everything that is. And as long as you retain any sense of individuality about you, God continues to explore His universe through your consciousness. And it is God's great joy to reveal to you these new truths as they come about. I've been taken on many, many fascinating experiences. Every day, really, is a tremendous, fascinating experience. I don't think that I've told this story before, only to one or two. But it's a wonderful experience. Once when I was at Cloud Mountain, during the year of silence and solitude. I suddenly, within myself, a spontaneous enunciation of Pramanand, bliss through love, Pramanand, echoed through my consciousness, and I felt like waves going out over water, that this consciousness, this word went out through space. And in my consciousness, I was connected with beings from another planet. That can sound fantastical to some, but this was my experience. And as I did so, they were dwelling within a cave, very highly advanced beings, a more highly advanced planet than our own. And in that experience, I came to know from them that they too were disciples of Mother, and that she had come to them and was working with them in their advanced state. She didn't need to come, although she could manifest physically. She didn't always have to come in a physical sense. They knew her spiritually, although she could also manifest herself physically there. And we had a wonderful time talking about Mother. And I said, she has such tremendous love. And immediately came back the resonance, yes. And then I said, and she has such tremendous will. And almost with laughter came another affirmative, yes. Because she was known there by the same virtues. And it was a tremendous experience. And because some people write about and tell about these kinds of experiences in loose kind of ways, shall we say, I've hesitated bringing it out, but apparently today I was to tell this. And it was a tremendous experience, and any time that I have felt guided inwardly, I have attuned myself to these great beings, and we've had wonderful conversations and times with each other. There are tremendous capacities within your soul. So many of them have been left unexplored. It is not because you do not have the innate capacity, but we have to do the work. We have to be willing to put in the practice if we are to have these capacities opened up within ourselves. And my prayer, my hope, my wish for each one of you is that you will go deep into the laboratory of your own beings, that you will bring out the innate beauty, the love, the peace, the joy that is dwelling deeply within you and just waiting to be expressed. I think it is a marvelous story that Jesus tells of the prodigal son, because the prodigal son takes the father's wealth and goes out and squanders it, living in a distant land. And finally decides that he'd had enough of that life, but he'd squandered everything that his father had given to him. Now he slowly makes his way back to the father, deciding that it'd be better to live as a servant in his father's house than the kind of destitute life that he had created for himself where he was at. So he's expecting absolutely nothing except for perhaps the privilege to live as a servant in his father's house. And as he makes his way slowly back to the father sees him at a great distance. And this is a really marvelous part of the story, I think. Because the father sees him and rushes out to the son to embrace him, to call for the servants to come and to minister to him, and to bring him back into the home and to celebrate his return. You see, God is calling to you. You would not be here today. You would not be on this path if God were not already calling to you. You could not think of God first if you could not think of God if God did not think of you first. So God is definitely calling to you. He's rushing out to you as the prodigal child to gather you up in his arms. And yet it is we who play hard to get. It is we who play hide-and-seek with God, we who do not take Him seriously. It is we who do not rush to be embraced by those all-loving, all-compassionate, all-wise arms, and to be gathered in once again. Fear and perhaps a bit of mischievousness, our desire nature. We want what we want, and we're afraid to give it up. But if we do, we find that not only do we not die, but we are truly born, and that we truly live. This is the great gift that is indicated through our acquiescence and surrender to the divine consciousness. What we are surrendering, what we are dying to, is the field of separation that surrounds us, that makes us feel that we are separate from God, from life, from everything that is. And in truth, there is no separation. There is only oneness. And when you discover that oneness, you will have it forever. Because no one can take it away from you. Only you can give it up. But having once established yourself back in that oneness, having had this great adventure as a human being in a field of separation, perhaps we will see the wisdom of never giving it up ever again. That we will want to live in that divine union and communion forever and forever. You know, we're told about angels who surround the throne of God, who are always singing to God. And it can sound, perhaps a little bit boring or staid, you know. You just sing the same songs over and over again. But really, the songs that are sung are the vibration of bliss that thrill through those souls again and again. And it is absolutely inconceivable to the mind to think of this bliss as being ever new joy. It is ever new, ever new. It is ever exploding within you, thrilling you in new and diverse ways, and you never, ever tire of it. You learn to drink it in as you learn to drink a fine wine, and you appreciate every nuance and everything that God gives to you. So let us fulfill our destiny. Let us go forth fearlessly and find the great promise of that kingdom of heaven that dwells within us. It is all waiting for you. God is calling to you. Let us do the work. Let us take the time. Let us make the effort to go to Him and discover everything that He has, because everything is within you. Everything is within you. Let us pray together. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet. And surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection. Surging through every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence. Are radiant with Thy healing light. My heart is filled with overflowing. Love and bliss. May it be there forever. And forevermore. Amen. Namaste. I bow to the light within you.